This is Jay Barris of Sidley Austin with the Mutual Fund Minute. The Securities and Exchange Commission blurred the distinction between who is an investor or mere trader and who is a dealer for purposes of the federal securities laws when it adopted final rules on February 6, 2024, defining activities that require someone to register as a dealer or a government securities dealer. By a 3-2 vote, the Commission approved rules that would require anyone that engages in a regular pattern of buying and selling securities that has the effect of providing liquidity to other market participants to register as a dealer under the Securities and Exchange Act of 1934. These new rules likely will require certain private funds and other institutional investors to register as dealers and then comply with all the regulation that follows. With me today is Charles Summers, a partner in Sidley's Regulatory and Enforcement Group in Washington, D.C., who will walk us through what these new rules mean and why they are significant. Welcome, Charlie. What did the commission do with this rule, and why is it significant?
Thanks for having me, Jay. In a nutshell, the commission broadened the definition of who is considered to be a dealer under the federal securities laws. The SEC has been concerned for a number of years that there are market participants that trade very actively and essentially trade as de facto market makers, but who are not subject to SEC oversight. As a result, the SEC adopted new rules that describe the type of trading that the SEC views as de facto market making. And anyone whose trading activity meets the new, as part of a regular business criteria set out by the SEC, must register as a dealer or a government securities dealer.
So the new rule establishes criteria for determining when a person is engaged in the business of trading for their own account. What does that mean?
Right. The Securities Exchange Act of 1934 defines a dealer to be any person engaged in the business of buying and selling securities for that person's own account. What the SEC's new rules interpret is what it means to be engaged in the business of buying and selling for one's own account, to generally include many firms that actively trade in today's markets but are currently not registered as a dealer.
Well, let's take a step back. What does a dealer do in the first place?
Sure. Under the Exchange Act, a dealer means any person who's engaged in the business of buying and selling securities for that person's own account through a broker-dealer or otherwise. Generally speaking, dealers add liquidity to markets. They trade for their own account as principals when investors cannot otherwise find other investors to trade with. So, for example, a buyer may want to sell a security at a time when no one wants to buy that security. Dealers typically fill that role and will buy from the seller. That liquidity is really what helps markets run efficiently.
Under the statute, then, is anybody who trades for its own account a dealer and required to register?
No. The statute excludes a person who does not buy or sell securities as part of a regular business. This statutory exclusion from the definition of a dealer is commonly known as the trader exception.
Okay, I'm a little confused here. So what's changing?
Well, what's changing is how the commission's rules interpret what it means to trade for one's own account as part of a regular business. In the SEC's view, very active traders whose activity has the effect of providing liquidity to other market participants and meets the criteria set forth in the rule should be considered to be trading for their own account as part of a regular business. So the rules are designed to capture very large trading firms like private funds or certain institutional investors whose trading activity or strategies, like certain quantitative and statistical arbitrage strategies, reflect de facto market making. Up until now, those investors were treated, pretty much like traders or simply as investors who were not required to register as dealers. They think of themselves as traders, not market makers.
What is the practical effect of these rules?
Well, one effect could be to reduce overall liquidity. This was, in fact, a point that Commissioner Peirce raised in her speech related to the adoption of these rules. Many unregistered firms engage in trading activity that falls under the rules will have to register as dealers or cease engaging in that trading activity. For those who decide to exit the market, you know, that'll reduce the overall amount of trading, having a negative impact on liquidity. And for those that choose to register as dealers, they'll have substantially greater compliance costs as they become subject to SEC and FINRA rules. And registering as a dealer can also limit those firms' ability to trade using leverage. This is because dealers are subject to net capital limitations that limit the ability to trade on a levered basis. In turn, this reduction in leverage can limit the overall volume in which a firm might trade, which in turn would negatively impact liquidity.
Wow, that is a mouthful. How did the SEC justify this expansion of these rules?
The premise for the SEC in advancing these rules was really developments in electronic trading in the securities market that have led to the emergence of certain market participants that play a significant role in providing liquidity in overall trading and market activity, but are not currently registered and subject to SEC or FINRA oversight. The SEC said that it believes that greater oversight of these firms will support market stability and resiliency. The SEC also noted a concern for the competitive disparity between firms that are registered as dealers today versus those that trade in a very similar manner but are not currently registered as dealers.
So then, how does the rule identify market participants who must register as dealers?
Well, the stated goal is to require any person, which would include an investor or a private fund, potentially even a pension fund, there are a couple of exceptions that we can discuss, that engage in a regular pattern of buying and selling securities that has the effect of providing liquidity to other market participants to have to register as a dealer. The SEC adopted two qualitative standards to further describe the activity that it views as providing liquidity.
Okay, qualitative standards. That always gives me pause here. What are those qualitative standards?
Sure. The first qualitative standard reflecting trading activity that the SEC views as providing liquidity to other market participants is regularly expressing trading interest that is at or near the best prices on both sides of the market for the same security, and that is communicated and represented in a way that makes it accessible to other market participants. The second alternative standard is whether the person earns revenue primarily from capturing spreads, such as buying at the bid and selling at the offer, or by capturing incentives offered by trading venues for posting liquidity. So if a person does either of these two activities, they are considered a dealer unless an exception applies.
But isn't that what all investors do? They buy and they trade, they buy, they sell, they trade to make a profit.
Well, not necessarily. You know, firms that engage in longer-term trading strategies or that typically do not buy and sell the same security within a day would probably be excluded. For example, a firm that decides to buy a stock on a given day and then happens to decide to sell that stock later the same day to capture a nice profit on a one-off basis is unlikely to be subject to the rules. This type of trading generally reflects that of an investor with a directional view in the stock. But in contrast, you know, if a private fund or other person, you know, frequently and quickly trades in and out of positions, that activity starts to more closely resemble a dealer. The SEC has previously noted that it makes little sense to refer to someone as investing in a company for a few seconds, minutes, or hours.
I see. But these rules reference expressing trading interests rather than, for example, orders. What does the SEC mean by the trading interest expression here?
Well, there's been some evolution in markets over the you know past few decades, and the SEC is really trying to capture more than just orders. So they created this broader term of trading interest to capture other means by which market participants may communicate a willingness to buy or sell a security. This is also designed to help prevent market participants from trying to sidestep the application of the rules by using things like indications of interest rather than firm orders.
Is there anything else of note we should worry about regarding these qualitative standards?
Good question. I would note that the SEC's guidance is very broad in describing the qualitative standards. As one example, the SEC states that to be captured under the first qualitative criteria, a firm does not need to be expressing trading interests on both sides of the market simultaneously. So as a result of this guidance, a firm that is buying in the morning and selling in the afternoon but is never on both sides of the market at the same time could still potentially be captured under the rules. The SEC also said that firms do not necessarily need to trade continuously in order to be subject to the rules.
Well, in terms of the different types of market participants that are affected by this rule, how far do these rules reach? I mean, if the rules now capture private funds that buy and sell frequently, wouldn't they also apply to registered investment companies like mutual funds and ETFs that trade frequently?
Well, there the rules specifically carve out registered investment companies.
Are there any other carve-outs?
Yes. The rule also exempts anyone who has or controls less than $50 million of assets, as well as central banks and sovereign entities and certain enumerated international financial institutions. But this means that nearly all fund managers and proprietary trading firms will still have to take a look at whether they fall into the new definition based on their trading activity. They don't qualify for one of these narrow exemptions. There's no presumption under the rule that a person is not a dealer if they do not meet one of these qualitative standards.
Charlie, you mentioned before that there are some net capital requirements for firms that have to register as a dealer. What are some of the other implications of having to register as a dealer?
A firm that must register with the SEC as a dealer generally must also become a member of the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, commonly known as FINRA, and they would be required to comply with all SEC and FINRA rules that apply to broker-dealers. Dealer registration would also entail significantly greater regulatory scrutiny and compliance, such as increased record-keeping, risk management, trade reporting. Dealers are required to self-report rule violations that they identify. Dealers are also subject to regular examinations and enforcement investigations. There are also substantial limitations and restrictions on their ability to withdraw capital from the dealer entity.
What securities do the rules cover?
The rule covers all securities, and this includes equities, options, fixed income securities, as well as treasury securities. It also includes crypto securities. The SEC specifically called out so-called DeFi or decentralized finance protocols and automated market makers in the crypto space as potentially subject to the rules. Treasuries are also an area of major scrutiny by the SEC of late. In adopting the rules, the SEC noted that unregistered firms account for about half of the daily volume of trading in treasuries.
Well, that's pretty broad. Is looking at this, do you think that this is really a backdoor way of regulating private funds?
In a way, yes, or at least those that trade very actively. It would have the effect of extending SEC dealer registration requirements to private funds that meet the new criteria.
Okay, last question. When do these rules take effect?
The rules become effective 60 days after the final rules are published in the Federal Register, which should be in mid-April. As of the date of this recording, I don't believe it's been published in the Federal Register yet. But firms that currently engage in trading activity falling under the rule will have a year from this Federal Register publication date to come into compliance. So April 2025 is when most firms must comply.
Okay. Thank you, Charles Summers, for walking us through the new rules that relate to who is now a dealer or who could be a dealer. This is Jay Barris of Sidley Austin with the Mutual Fund Minute.
This presentation has been prepared by Sidley Austin LLP and affiliated partnerships, the firm, for informational purposes and is not legal advice. This information is not intended to create, and receipt of it does not constitute, a lawyer-client relationship. All views and opinions expressed in this presentation are our own, and you should not act upon this information without seeking advice from a lawyer licensed in your own jurisdiction. The firm is not responsible for any errors or omissions in the content of this presentation, or for damages arising from the use or performance of this presentation under any circumstances. Do not send us confidential information until you speak with one of our lawyers and receive our authorization to send that information to us. Providing information to the firm will not create an attorney-client relationship in the absence of an express agreement by the firm to create such a relationship, and will not prevent the firm from representing someone else in connection with the matter in question or a related matter. The firm makes no warranties, representations, or claims of any kind concerning the information presented on or through this presentation. Attorney Advertising, Sidley Austin LLP, 1 South Dearborn, Chicago, Illinois, 60603, 1-312-853-7000. Prior results do not guarantee a similar outcome.